You're listening to a CNA podcast.
Hello, everyone. It's Crispina here with you. Adrian is away this week, so I'm flying solo. Joining me online today is a rather special guest, I have to say. Alvin Goh was WorkIt's very first guest. That was in July 2022. My gosh, the time has flown by, right? In that episode, we talked about hybrid working because we had just emerged from COVID and everyone was just getting adjusted to heading back into the office. It is March 2024 and it is safe to say almost everyone is back, almost all of the time. I thought I'd have Alvin back as a way to look back at just how much has changed since our last conversation. He is Executive Director at the Singapore Human Resource Institute, or SHRI. Welcome back, Alvin.
Thanks, Crispina. Thanks for having me back.
Okay, let me start by asking you, how has your work life changed in the last 2 years since we chatted?
I think definitely the intensity of work has, you know, quadrupled to some extent in terms since we last talked a lot about it. Especially now that we are, as clearly pointed out, we are back into the workplace and there are lots of transition plans that are happening. And as well, you know, at SHRI, we are actually organizing the World HR Congress as well.
Okay. I did a quick check of all the episodes that we've had so far. We've run for two seasons. Among the top episodes were switching careers, what happens when you lose your job, transition is the theme that people resonate with. In fact, in the 2024 Edelman Trust Barometer, which was released by the global communications firm Edelman, had this interesting number, which I thought I'd share with you. 93% of employed respondents from Singapore are worried about job loss. That's 3% more from last year. You've seen the headlines, right? Left, right, and center, we've got Lazada, Shopee, Spotify, all the tech companies. Is this what you're seeing as well?
You're right. I think the data is a true reflection of what the ground is happening. Because I firmly believe that what's really happening on a global sense is that economies and also organizations are moving away from a very brick-and-mortar, paper-driven economy to a very digital economy. And business leaders are also looking at how can my role or how can the role that my employees are performing be digitalized as well. And I think the digitalization here, that's what a lot of people say, it's here to stay. But for me, is digitalization and AI is just not here to stay. It's here to grow exponentially. And I think it will grow exponentially over the next couple of years. In certain functions and certain roles, the roles might stay, but the activities and tasks below those roles would be easily replaced by digitalization or AI as well.
Yeah.
And this is the transition point that a lot of business leaders are thinking about, right? Take, for example, in the world of HR, today we have AI that is able to conduct interviews for us to be able to source and to be able to identify certain key competencies that organizations are looking at. And thus, we do not need necessarily a full-time executive handling talent acquisition for us.
How does it work? So, for example, if I'm applying for a job, an AI bot comes up in a virtual setting, and then he asks me certain questions in response to some of my answers. And then so all of this is transcribed. Is somewhere, right?
Yes.
Which is given to you, let's say. And then you review my answers or you review the video. Is that how it's working right now?
So clearly pointed out, it's word to text. And from the text perspective, the AI would be able to pick out keywords, even from a video interview as well. Word to text in a video, the AI would be able to pick out certain keywords and competencies that the organization is actually looking out for. I've also seen one or two platforms whereby the AI through the video recordings is able to tell even from your facial recognition and to some extent your body language, right? And that is how powerful AI potentially could be into going to the future, right?
Wow.
Yeah. It's not surprising because a couple of years ago, in fact, more than about 8 to 10 years ago, organizations were already using applicant tracking system, ATS for short.
Okay.
Right. And ATS platform has actually evolved over time, over the last 10 years.
What's the ATS? Maybe you can just give me a quick explanation.
So the applicant tracking system, when it first came out, was that it was actually a system to actually compile all the CVs and profiles that applicants were submitting. And from there, it grew into the second and third phases whereby ATS was able to pick up competencies from the
resumes.
Paper, from the resumes itself. right? Certain keywords that the organization were looking at, for example, team building, teamwork, leadership, right? The system was able to pick up all these keywords and shortlist, right, for the hiring managers to actually have the first cut. But yeah, so, and Clay pointed out earlier on, as you have indicated, the second and subsequent versions also include a quick reply, or thank you for applying, you know, we'll get back to you within the next couple of days kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so these are all automated today.
Actually, to me, it's even more than administrative. There's some judgment involved, right? But
yes.
I think HR especially used to suffer from crippling administrative, menial, tedious tasks, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is, we can't stop hearing about AI. We were talking earlier and you were saying that we are in a transition period. And transitions can be tough, right? Some companies, quick-footed, I would say. So they know what they want, they know where they're going, they get the right people, they pay the right people, and the transition moves quite smoothly. And then there's other people, other companies, maybe smaller companies, maybe very traditional kind of leadership, which might be struggling. Who, in your experience, is at greatest risk of disruption?
I don't think it's a segmentation issue. I think it's really very much of a mindset issue, especially even for the multinationals, right? The moment when you have a senior leadership team, when they start resting on their laurels, I think that's where everything could potentially go south.
Okay.
Because as we clearly have seen it, the world is in transition and it's changing. The business world is not a static one. So on that note, HR as well, we cannot be static. We need to be as dynamic as our business leaders. And as I said earlier on, the moment we are static, the moment we start resting on our laurels and say that we've done so much and that's all we could potentially do, we need to constantly push the boundaries. And we are at a very nice, I call it nice sweet spot, because the world is unpacking itself in terms of what's happening, in terms of digitalization, in terms of what AI is happening, in terms of the societal values are also evolving. Within the next 12 to 18 months, we will see the first digital nomads coming out into the workforce.
Yes.
Kids who actually grew up with milk bottle in one hand and smartphone in the other. And they will be coming out into the workforce. And it's exciting times for HR to look at how we could actually marry the digital nomads with the generations above. And we're moving into a multi-generation workforce. And therefore, exciting times now.
This is a nice segue, you know. Actually, originally, I wanted this podcast to be something about Gen Z, but I had trouble getting Gen Zs who were employed in a corporate setting to come talk to me because I think they were afraid they were going to talk bad about their bosses or something. So let's come back to this: work norms have changed, right? You know, I'm sure you're seeing this. You're right about the digital adults coming into the workplace. I hear a lot of this thing, the right to disconnect, setting your boundaries, mental health is very important. So what are some of the conversations that are coming up that you're seeing, which is very different from yours and my generation?
You know, in the past, when we go for an interview, you know, and when the employer asks us if we have any questions to ask, we ask about company's culture, we ask about what would be the key deliverables. Today, when we have interviews, the first question that normally pops out is, do you allow remote working? That's the first and more frequent questions that are surely popping out today, right? Does your company have flexible work arrangements? Do you allow me to work remotely and stuff like that? I think COVID has actually, to some extent, educated the workforce that, hey, look, there's more to life than just a 9-to-5 job. There's more to life than just the big condos and everything that I really want to have. And it's important to also disconnect from the workplace. And I think it's important because we have seen what has happened during COVID, that a lot of us ran into a burnout phase, including myself. I was almost at the brink of a burnout.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it's important for us to then understand where our trigger points are and take a step back. And I think it's perfectly all right to disconnect from the workplace. Take, for example, Australia just 3 weeks ago just legislated that employees cannot connect or contact their employees after office hours. And today is a legislated item. Right. I think it's important here in Singapore as well that employers must understand that when their employees disconnect from the workplace outside of office hours, it is a perfectly all right situation that you must allow them to, because burnout is real. Mental health is real. And more importantly, we must also adopt a culture whereby it's a safe environment for our employees to actually voice out that, hey, look, I'm really at the brink of burnout. Mm. I'm not only an employee, I'm also a caregiver. I'm a single mother or whatsoever, right? I think we need that environment, that safe environment for our employees to voice out.
Yeah. I totally agree. I'm not sure if Singapore will legislate. I think it's very complicated here because we have quite a punishing work culture, right? You must admit, we work very long hours. We're really running after that last dollar. But I agree completely with you that I think the right to disconnect is not just a right, but it's a value to the employer. Because to me, if I am not at my best state, whether it's physical or mental, then what good am I to the company, to my boss, to the work that I put out? Mm. So it should be seen as the exact thing that helps your employees be good at what they do, rather than to think of it as something, oh, you're taking time off, it's negative, you know?
Yeah, exactly. This is the mindset change that we need to recognize, that employers and business leaders will need to have that perspective. It's also important that business leaders and as well as CEOs of organizations, they must admit that burnout is real and have that perspective. And burnout can also affect themselves and their work performance.
So I'm going to wrap, but this section is a slightly long one. There was a piece in the Harvard Business Review on the future of work trends. So I'm going to read out a couple of things and then you see if you agree, okay? So the first one, retaining talent will not just be about money. Things like flexible work, childcare, and mental health benefits will matter more for a newer generation.
Rightly so. I think the data and the research from Harvard is rightly pointed out. Even here in Singapore, we also recognize that the social credit between an employer and employee is no more in the common band space, but more geared to the environment of learning. Our government has been spot on in terms of trying to advocate and push for upskilling and reskilling the workplace.
Right. Right?
And I think that's the social credit that a lot of employees are also looking out for. Beyond just the dollars and cents, flexible work is definitely one because different priorities in life, different societal values are also changing. Take for example, my daughter is going to graduate within the next 12 to 18 months. And she actually has indicated that she's looking for a very much more work-life balance style role. And this is going to be her first job out of university. unlike during our time whereby when even 2 years before we graduate, our parents were like, please go get a good job. Please go get a good job.
Yeah. We come from that generation where when you're young, you work, right? There's no such thing as work-life balance. Yeah.
So even take, for example, over the last couple of years as well, as what we've seen, especially during COVID, or even to some extent before COVID as well, a lot of the graduates from coming from perhaps maybe more affluent family or otherwise, they were doing gap years.
Yes.
Mom, Dad, I want to do a gap year. And the reason for a gap year is that they just want to tour, they just want to go see the world, they want to experience certain things before deciding on what their next career is going to be.
Yeah, but they have a long runway. I mean, so, you know, it's okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Next one. 4-day work week will no longer be radical, but routine.
There is a difference between a 4-day work week and a compressed 4-day work week.
What's the difference?
So a 4-day work week is basically you work 9 to 5, but a compressed work week is that perhaps maybe you start at 8 and you work to 7.
Right? To make up for the 5th day that you're not working.
Exactly, exactly. So there must be a clear differentiation on this as well. All right. Something to think about. Recently, I was actually talking to a CHRO from a very big, well-known telco company. Mm. And the data actually showed very interesting that bandwidth for social media goes up on a Monday and a Friday.
Yes.
Right. So go figure on that front. When our employees are currently, let's say, working from home, are they productive? What are they doing?
Yeah.
You think about it. So on that note, does really a 4-day work week really will benefit us? But if you're coming from a mental health perspective, you're coming from a differentiated benefit strategy to attract talent.
Yes.
Then perhaps, especially if your organization is a very much younger organization in the tech startup space or for that matter in the startup space, and you want to attract a different profile of employees, Yeah, by all means do so.
I'm thinking for women with young children.
Exactly.
This differentiated thing, I think, is not a bad idea. I know it's a bit complex for HR to work out, but why not? Okay, next one. Conflict resolution is a must-have soft skill for all managers. Agree?
Yes, I fully agree. I think one of the key areas, even here in Singapore, we are going to talk about the potential of legislating, grievance handling, harassment issues.
Yes.
Right? And the burden of responsibility goes down to the line managers to try to resolve issues at the ground level. And that's a skill set that a lot of line managers must pick up, especially if you're a young and newly promoted manager, right? Handling a team. I think it's a skill set that many of us must adopt and learn as well before matters get escalated into a bigger issue as well.
Yeah.
But yet, I'm also cautious that please don't open a peanut with a sledgehammer. All right. Yeah. So don't overblow things, and everything is something that you must investigate. And so sometimes it's just a basic misunderstanding that could be easily resolved.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Last one. Skills requirements will overtake paper qualifications.
You know, this is something that is really up for debate. If you speak to the academia, I think paper qualifications are still important because it instills discipline, it instills the basic foundation of certain subjects. But yeah, what I'm also seeing is that we require people who are able to see things from an outside-in perspective. Paper gives you the foundation, but the acumen from outside-in, being able to connect the dots, being able to see it from a multidisciplinary perspective or lens is also equally important. And that could only be acquired when someone actually dares to venture outside. To me, there are three types of people. The first type, of course, we know to think inside the box. The second are people who think outside the box is common. But to me, there's a third type of people, the people who actually dares to throw away the box and start thinking about things.
Yeah. So you need all three.
Yeah, exactly. We need all three types of people. People who dare to push the boundaries, people who are able to connect the dots from the outside in. Let me give you an example. There's this organization that SHI, we were doing some consulting work with. They include print knowledge, printing technology, material science, and orthopedic medical science to create a medtech organization. So if you think about it from that lens, basically what they are doing is they are doing 3D printing for bones, for skull caps, for cheekbones. These are the types of organizations, or these are the potential skill sets or that employees will be looking out for to be able to be multidisciplinary.
Right.
And that could potentially be only be looked at not beyond the academia, right? Beyond your double degree per se.
Beyond your fancy degree or your PhD, right?
To be very frank, I'm actually also doing my doctorate currently.
Thank you, Alvin, for coming on. Thank you for listening to us on the Work It podcast. Stay tuned for some changes that are coming up with our podcast as well as the other podcasts that CNA offers. Do listen next week when Adrian and I close the season with a slightly different episode. Thanks to my CNA podcast team for all the heavy lifting behind the scenes.